Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Debate Wednesday. Today I'm your host, Julian Bravo, the King, and I'm here with, as always, our co-host, Sean Elmer. Sean, how's it going today?
Good. Glad to be back on the show, Julian.
Sam as well, and we're supposed to have on Maxwell Ogden from Bleacher Report. He'll be coming on in just a little bit, but before we get to it, the number to the show today is 646-716-5733. Once again, 646-716-5733. The email to the show is skbtradio@gmail.com, and the chat room is now open. On some other notes, I just want to let our listeners know a lot of exciting things are coming very soon to Sports Kingdom. We have a lot of exciting things coming very soon, such as the Q&A, new theme song, our one-year anniversary, to new co-hosts, and especially some awesome guests that we're supposed to have on sometime in the near future. So a lot of exciting things are happening very soon, so just stay tuned to Sports Kingdom as we make sure that this is your home for all sports on Blog Talk Radio. Now, let's see. Oh, yep. Here he is. But today we have Maxwell Ogden again from Sport. Max, how's it going today?
Not bad. How are you?
Not bad myself, as we got a good show today. So today we begin with PJ Carlissimo being fired by the Brooklyn Nets. This came as a surprise as he led the team with a 35-19 record once he replaced Avery Johnson as the interim head coach. From my opinion, I thought PJ Carlissimo did a fine job, and plus the Brooklyn Nets made it back to the playoffs.
Hello.
All right. We all just got disconnected, but we are now back on the air. Anyways, getting back to PJ Carlesimo, just like I was saying, the Nets made huge accomplishments after coming off a poor season last year and poor seasons previously before. So I want to first go to you, Sean, but did you think the Nets justified their pace by firing PJ Carlesimo?
Actually, Julian, I'm going to, with this being a debatable topic, I'm going to say no. I'd say PJ Carlesimo should have been kept, and he should have been brought, should be brought back next year, but he isn't. But I was surprised, I have to say. I mean, I know the Brooklyn Nets lost in that seven-game series to the Bulls, but don't you think you got to give them some credit? I mean, they took I know the Bulls didn't have Luol Deng and Derrick Rose, but still, the Bulls still do have talent on their team, and Boozer and so many other guys. Even though Heinrich was out too, but I understand that. But still, the Bulls, you know, they were still one of the upper echelon teams in the Eastern Conference. So I – and with, you know, outside of – Lopez, Deron Williams, and Joe Johnson. I mean, the Brooklyn Nets, you know, they're somewhat of a mediocre team outside of those three key guys. So I think, you know, for the job that they did, for what they did do, I say you got to – it wasn't the right move. They should have made it permanent for PJ Carlesimo. I was surprised that he was fired.
Yeah, same as well, and referring back to the point you mentioned. But they lasted a very long while in the playoffs within only the first round. They played the Chicago Bulls, who are a team who I must say one of the elite teams in the Eastern Conference. And it was a tough challenge there, but the Chicago Bulls were able to hold on, and now they're playing the Miami Heat, which is pretty exciting as they won game one. But getting back to the Brooklyn Nets anyways, though, PJ Carlesimo, I think this was too soon of a decision. They just decided to let him go once the playoffs were over for the Brooklyn Nets. So if I had to go to you, Max, did you think the Brooklyn Nets justified their case by firing PJ Carlesimo?
I think that was honestly it was the only option. You know, you like to think about reputations. You like to think, well, they made the playoffs. You know, the Nets were not just star happy. They're a better team than people give them credit for. The issue is they don't have, you know, the household name. Reggie Evans led the league in rebounds for 48 minutes. Chris Humphries is a quality rebounder. Andre Blatch had a great year in comparison to what he did in Washington. They have a good backup point guard in C.J. Watson. They have a promising young shooting guard in Marshawn Brooks. And Gerald Wallace is a former All-Star. You know, everyone says, oh, well, he doesn't do much on offense. Gerald Wallace is one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA, one of the best all-around defenders. And during the playoffs, he looked like Joe Johnson, and Joe Johnson looked like him. I just think, you know, the roster was too good to be this bad, and I think there's one statistic that I can say that shows you why PJ Carlesimo was fired. During the regular season, the Nets were 25th in percentage of field goals assisted. In other words, they went isolation basketball on almost every single play. You can make it to the playoffs, and what they did without having any chemistry is impressive. This was their first year together. We can't forget that. But, you know, Carlesimo, he was the interim guy. And not only that, but, you know, at some point you have to forget about success and start thinking, you know what, this team just gave up. They gave up during Game 7. They should have beaten the Bulls in Game 7 by at least 15 points. The Bulls were without their starting small forward, their starting point guard, Derrick Rose, their backup point guard, Kirk Heinrich. And who beat them? Joakim Noah was dominant on offense. There was no reason that shouldn't happen. Brooke Lopez played incredible basketball for all seven games, but nobody else wanted to show up with him. It's just, it made no sense. And, you know, it's almost like the Los Angeles Clippers. Vinny Del Negro is leading them to wins, but at the end of the day, when your locker room clearly is giving up on you, you need a fresh start. And as a Philadelphia Eagles fan, I think you can understand that with Andy Reid.
Yeah, most definitely. Sean and I actually had the Brooklyn Nets going over the Chicago Bulls in Game 7 back in Brooklyn the other week. That prediction, though, wasn't right, as the Brooklyn Nets fell, as Max just said. But, yeah, you know, actually, Max, we were talking about Vinny Del Negro on the show this past Sunday. If we could quickly get your thoughts on what you think the Clippers should do with Vinny Del Negro, then what would that be?
I think Vinny Del Negro is in the same boat as Mike D'Antoni. And what that boat is, he's a good head coach. He can lead a team to playoff success. Vinny Del Negro isn't the reason the Clippers have lost, but he's coaching a team where the superstar has more power than him. And that is always a combustible factor. You know, the reason the Lakers never turned it around is because, I mean, they did turn it around, honestly, but the reason that they struggled so much is because Kobe Bryant is more important than Mike D'Antoni, and that's the way that the coaches think. That's the way that the players think, excuse me. If your coach doesn't have full control of your locker room, the points he's getting across are going to be null and void. When Vinny Del Negro is only playing DeAndre Jordan 25 minutes and the players on the team are saying, well, he should be playing more, you know, if Chris Paul is saying he should be playing more, then that's what everyone else in the locker room is going to think. They're not going to listen when Vinny Del Negro rightfully says the guy can't hit a free throw. He's a liability offensively, even if he has come a long way. So to me, you know, it's another case just like Brooklyn. You know, you need a fresh start, and you need a coach that's going to step in there and be like, hey, Chris Paul, you know what? You're a superstar, but guess what? You haven't won a thing. And that's the fact at the end of the day. Dwight Howard, you haven't won a thing. Chris Paul, you haven't won a thing. You barely made it out of the first round. So this is my team. It's going to go how I want it to go. And if you don't want to deal with that, then we don't need you back. And at the end of the day, that's why the Miami Heat won the title last year. That's why the Dallas Mavericks beat the Miami Heat 2 years ago. That's why the Lakers won so many titles and the Bulls won so many titles, because they had powerful head coaches that took control and said, I trust you, you're my superstar, but this is my team. And right now, Vinny Del Negro doesn't have that power.
Yeah, I think so too, like me and Sean were saying, but Vinny Del Negro, he just hasn't showed that fire to coach the Clippers to a championship. I mean, we thought the Clippers would at least advance through the first round, but that didn't happen. They were cut short by the Grizzlies, who are now playing Oklahoma City Thunder. But all right, well, is there anything else, Sean, you want to say anything real fast?
No, we can keep rolling.
All right, well, we'll roll on to Victor Cruz. Victor Cruz, who's been in speculation as to whether or not he will return as a New York Giant. His contract has been upheld for quite some time, and people are wondering, where is Victor Cruz going to wind up next year in the NFL? So if I had to ask you that question first, Max, then where do you think Victor Cruz may end up in the NFL next year?
I mean, it's almost hard to imagine that, you know, he won't be a Giant, because if you think about it, you know, you're new in the league. You really are. You know, he's had two good seasons, but, you know, any Giants fan will tell you, any NFC East fan will tell you that the guy still drops a lot of passes, a lot of easy passes. He's still a raw prospect, a product. And you know, he's had the benefit of coming into a system that's led by Eli Manning. So, you know, it's not as if he's this superstar receiver with nothing to prove. He's a guy who came from a small school, who was given a chance by the Giants, and he stepped up. I honestly don't think he'd leave the Giants yet. I don't think he's built enough of a reputation around the league to really command the salary that some people think. You know, wide receivers are a dime a dozen nowadays. And, you know, he's playing extraordinarily well, but I think at the end of the day, he's going to sit back and think, unless I end up in a system with another elite quarterback, and there aren't too many of those in the NFL, you know, why would I leave? I have a quarterback who's led our team to two Super Bowls. I have a quarterback who, even when he's inconsistent, he's one of the best fourth quarter quarterbacks we've ever seen. So, I mean, contract disputes are always difficult, but it's hard to imagine he'll end up anywhere but the Giants.
Yeah, you talk about how Eli Manning has led this team to lots of success, and they've been to a couple Super Bowls, and they have, I think, a wonderful front office with Jerry Reese. I think he always does a great job through the drafts and free agency. I think he always knows what he has and has set up inside his mind, and so I think New York is a nice place to play for. It's a nice place to play for, and if Victor Cruz decides to leave and go elsewhere, well, it'll be good for some other team as far as star power is concerned. But for the New York Giants are going to be left empty-handed. They'll pretty much have only Hakeem Nicks and a few others as receiving weapons for Eli Manning. So let's hear from you, Sean, but do you think Victor Cruz will return to the New York Giants, or will he go elsewhere next year?
So I got to agree with both you and Max. I got to say, I can't envision any other scenario other than what you two were saying. I can't foresee him playing elsewhere other than the Giants. I mean, he's been with the Giants.
Hello? Are we still on?
All right, well, we're back again. Sorry for the technical difficulties. I don't know what seems to be going on here, but we're now back with the question once again going to you, Sean, but do you think Victor Cruz will return to the New York Giants, or he will... do you think he'll end up elsewhere?
No. Like I was saying, I can't see him playing anywhere else but the New York Giants next season. He's been with them throughout his whole career, so I think, you know, like I said, I think he's going to ultimately decide, and you'll hear in the not-so-distant future that he's coming back to the New York Giants next season.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Sean, but trying to get Max back on the air here. I'm sorry, but we're having some major technical difficulties right now. We just keep on getting disconnected here, but we just keep on trying to prolong the show. So let me finish this off finish it off along with Victor Cruz by saying that Victor Cruz, I think, will return to the New York Giants. I think the New York Giants, once again, is a very nice place for Victor Cruz, especially in his young career. I just don't envision him going elsewhere, like you said, Sean. I mean, maybe there are a few teams out there who could be in need of a wide receiver like Victor Cruz, but other than that, I foresee Victor Cruz returning to the New York Giants. Hopefully they'll get this contract situation settled, and they'll just move on. They'll just move on from there. Max, if you're listening, the number to the show is 646-716-5733. Once again, 646-716-5733. Just sorry once again, don't know what's happening, but now we'll move forward to our next topic, which is Mike Socia of the Angels. Mike Socia and the Anaheim Angels right now have been struggling. They've been struggling. They picked up Josh Hamilton over the offseason. They also picked up Albert Pujols and DJ Wilson from the 2011 offseason. There have been high expectations of the LA the Anaheim Angels. And right now they haven't been sitting too well with the 11-21 record. 11-21 record. That's not pretty good to start off this season. Which leads me to ask you, Sean, but is Mike Socia, Angels manager, Mike Socia on the hot seat?
He could be. I mean, because look what he has on his roster. You know. He has one of the best power hitters and one of the best young hitters and players in Trout and the best power hitter, like I said, in Pujols. And they have such a great rotation. So I just... You know, I'd keep an eye on that, Julian, since you bring that up. I think, this keeps up. The Angels, I mean, they're 16th in the league in runs. They are 10th in batting average, but 20th in on-base percentage and, 13th in slugging percentage. So the numbers aren't bad, but, for an Angels team with that kind of talent, I think they could be a lot better than their 11-21 record. They should be possibly even the opposite of that record. I mean, at 21-11, they're losing to Houston last night 7-6. It just, I don't know. I mean, this keeps up. Keep an eye on that, because after all these years of success with Mike Socia in LAA, in Southern California, it might just be his time to get the old boot out the door, the old axe.
Yeah, most definitely. Mike Socia was the one who led the Anaheim Angels to a World Series about a decade ago. And now as you look at it from the press box today, Mike Socia and the Angels have been really struggling. The whole team is just not playing up to their expectations. You look at Joe Bland, for instance. Joe Bland, former Philly, was picked up by the Anaheim Angels over the offseason, has an 0-5 record, and Tommy Hansen as well, another guy. He hasn't been doing too well for the Anaheim Angels. Don't forget, the Anaheim Angels have been making people become so high that some people actually picked them to go to the World Series. Some people actually thought they could possibly go to the World Series this year, but as everything is playing out right now, things are just looking pretty ugly with the Anaheim Angels as they sit with a 11-21 record once again, and they are second last in their division, right ahead of Houston. I mean, that's a pretty bad spot, you would have to agree, Sean.
Yeah, I totally agree, Julian. Like I said, I feel that they should be with another guy who was in a World Series, just to bring it up, in C.J. Wilson, just a couple of seasons ago with Texas. I mean, with the talent that they have, it's just very surprising to see them already 8.5 games back in the AL West, you know, with that talent on their team. Like me and you were saying, I don't think if this keeps up, it won't be much before the All-Star break that Mike Scioscia could find himself out of a job.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I don't know what we could say much more, but right now, Ryan Matson, Jared Weaver, Burnett, Lowe, and Albert Pujols are on the injury report as we speak. They're all on the injury report, and those are about the only players who are out right now for the Anaheim Angels. Mike Trout, just to bring him up real fast, he's been doing pretty good once again to start off the season, but you know what? Anaheim is not a good place right now if you're playing there, because things are just looking pretty ugly, and I think Mike Scioscia will lose his job sometime soon if they don't stop this drought right now. So, all right, well, with that, we're going to move on to the – well, actually, you know what? We're going to move on to who we think is absolute – or who we think pitched the absolute best perfect game of all time in Major League Baseball history. There have been so many. There have been 23 perfect games pitched throughout the history of Major League Baseball. I mean, I find this very interesting, since there's been so much history in the past, and there's also been so much recent history that's occurred with Matt Cain, Felix Hernandez, Philip Humber, Roy Halladay. I mean, you talk about those guys who just recently put on a perfect game. A perfect game is a very hard thing to accomplish, and with that, you got to give credit out to those pitchers who put every ounce of their energy into a perfect game. So, but if I could ask you, Sean, out of the 23 perfect games in MLB history, if you had to name one. Name one that you think's been the absolute best, and what game would it be?
Julian, we were talking about this off the air, and wow. It's tough. I mean,
Let me just start off then by saying Don Larsen, I was saying this before he came on the air, but Don Larsen, he pitched an outstanding perfect game in Game 5 of the World Series back in the 50s. Don Larsen, he was truly a great pitcher. Didn't know too much about him, but once I got to know him well, I thought that this guy Surely was a great pitcher and surely put on one of the best perfect games of all time. But then if I had to quickly mention which game I feel was the absolute best in recent history, then I would say Matt Cain, the game he pitched from last year, the perfect game he pitched from last year, was surely one hell of a moment that I think no one will ever forget. When Gregor Blanco and I think it was Brandon Belt, Gregor Blanco, those two saved Matt Cain's perfect game, and Matt Cain he surely put on one hell of a game at AT&T Park, and I just can't ever forget that moment as it just happened last year. And it was just an incredible moment that happened in my career.
Yeah, Julian, I have to agree with you there. But if I had to name my one, my perfect game that I like, while Don Larson does rank up there, his perfect games in Major League history is one of my favorites. I got to go with a little back in the day, about a little over a decade ago, and I got to go to it's actually a tie for me. I like the two Yankee perfect games back to, in like successive seasons, and between David Ice Cream Cone and David Boomer Wells. And the one actually was on Yogi, was it Yogi Berra Day? Don Larson was in the booth of, I believe it was David Cone's perfect game at Yankee Stadium. And that was just something, that was just something else, those two perfect games in back-to-back seasons. Yankees have David, Don Larson in 56, David Wells in 98, and David Cone in 99 to cap it off. And like I said, with Don Larson in the booth that day, and David Cone goes out and just throws this absolute masterpiece. And just seeing him, the image that stands out in my mind, as I'll say, is just seeing him on that final out just fall to his knees, and Jorge Posada, the great Yankee catcher of recent playing days and all that, runs up and mobs him, and Derek Jeter, and just seeing that, I have a DVD of all the no-hitters and perfect games in Major League history, and just watching that every once in a while, it's incredible to watch. And also, don't forget, Mark Burley had that perfect game where that center fielder took away a home run in the ninth inning and saved his perfect game. So there have been a lot of them. So it's tough to name one, but the ones that stand out for me are Wells and Cones.
Two Yankees.
Of course, Roy Halladay, but I'll just say with Doc's, because, you know, Doc was deserving to throw a no-hitter, and look, he threw a perfect game and a no-hitter in that same season, but he threw that against the Miami Marlins. So, I mean, they're a team that, you know, you would expect once in a while to see a no-hitter pitched against them. But that was kudos for Roy Halladay, though, in that game. It was nice to see Doc, like I said. And then, Doc threw only the second no-hitter in postseason history. I know we're talking about perfect games, but just to mention it, he joined only Don Larson. So it is. I was looking forward to this topic, so that's my little tidbit on what perfect games I like.
Yeah, I don't know, Sean, if we had to predict the future, do you foresee much more perfect games ahead? Of course, we saw many throughout recent history, as I mentioned before, but do you think we could possibly see much more perfect games? We almost saw Yu Darvish of the Texas Rangers pitch a perfect game, but do you think looking ahead we could see many more perfect games?
Oh yeah, on any given day. If you never know. All of a sudden you just, if as a starting pitcher, you get into a groove and, you know, the zeros start piling up and you get going, and before you know it, you're sixth, seventh inning, and you're looking up, and as the pitcher, you're left alone. It's it takes on like I don't know if you want to say like a creepy feel to it. I mean, there's guys in the majors. There were a lot of guys that never pitched perfect games, like Pedro Martinez and Roger Clemens. He never got one. But just saying. But yeah, any given day, any guy could pitch a perfect game. I mean, I love seeing. I'd like to see one this season. I mean, I know we've had a couple of close calls, and if I had to just say kind of off the record, the perfect game that wasn't a few years ago, Armando Galarraga, that kind of ranks up on my list, too. I mean, that seeing Jim Joyce, a great umpire, botch that call at first base in that Tigers game, that would have been Armando Galarraga's, but the next day he comes out and he works behind the plate and he gives him, as Galarraga exchanges the lineup card, gives him a pat on the shoulder and says, "Hey, I cost you a perfect game, but it's all well and good now." So that's just another one that stands out for me, just to say off the record. But yeah, any given day, any guy could pitch a no-hitter or a perfect game.
Yeah, and I also want to mention, but Matt Harvey, the guy who we extolled a month back, almost pitched a perfect game just a couple days ago. Matt Harvey, I said before, he's drawing comparisons to Justin Verlander, and only in his first full season, he's doing pretty good for the New York Mets. Really good. Almost had it in the ninth, but was cut short. So, all right, well, with these last 20 minutes, unfortunate we lost Max, but I don't know. What do you say, Sean? We run on one more topic, or we get going with our new segment?
Yeah, we could do one more topic. Why not?
All right. Let's do one more topic then. Let's talk about let's talk about if there could be any possible upsets in the NBA playoffs. Right now, we see the Bulls up 1-0, and we see we almost saw Golden State defeat San Antonio the other night, but San Antonio happened to win that game in a double overtime thriller. Just one amazing game, but Golden State almost defeated San Antonio, and Chicago's up 1-0. You also have the games between Memphis and OKC, and then you also have the game between Indiana and New York, which is right now tied up at 1-1, the series. It was, in my opinion, surprising that Indiana was able to pick up the first win of the series between New York, especially in the Garden. I think the Garden's one of the most toughest places to play at, and for a very young team, especially with Paul George, it was just very surprising to see the Indiana Pacers win over the New York Knicks in Game 1, but the New York Knicks anyways came back and won Game 2. So let's talk about if there could be any possible upsets. So, Sean, do you think we could see any possible upsets in this year's NBA playoffs?
With the matchups where they are right now, I will say yes. I mean, you know, I could see, as crazy as it sounds, Julian, even though they were the NBA's best team in the regular season, the big three down in South Beach, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh and the Miami Heat, 66-win regular season Miami Heat, no less. I could foresee the Bulls, especially if they could win Game 2 tonight and head back to Chicago, up two games on the Miami Heat. If the Miami Heat lose tonight, they're in trouble, I'm willing to say. And Golden State, that's another one where I could foresee an upset. You want me to be honest? I could foresee upsets in all four of the remaining series, to be brutally honest with you. I could foresee Chicago, Golden State, Memphis, and the Pacers all winning in their series. They have legitimate chances as any. As I'm looking up here, actually, the Bulls and Heat are tied at 10 in the early goings of Game 2. So there you go. That just emphasizes my point. I mean, the Bulls, despite all their missing players.
Sean, you're willing to go out on a limb and say all those teams could pull off possible upsets.
Yes, I'm willing to go out on a limb and say that, Julian. I just, you know, look, Golden State took San Antonio to double overtime before San Antonio pulled off that incredible, epic, wild comeback, whatever word you want to use. And Memphis, series tied 1-1 with OKC. OKC doesn't have much outside of Kevin Durant with Russell Westbrook being gone for the postseason. And even though the Knicks blew out the Pacers in Game 2, that series is coming back to Indiana on Saturday. So, you know, it's possible. I mean, I'm not saying that it will happen, but it's not beyond the realm of possibility that it could happen, where you see Eastern Conference Finals of Bulls-Pacers, old school, like an old school matchup, and Western Conference Finals of Golden State and Memphis. I could foresee it happening.
Well, I know things are starting to heat up in the NBA playoffs, but I think we got to look at reality here. We all have to truly look at reality here. You see, you saw how Miami put on such a great season, and San Antonio included, those two teams. Sorry, just had a cough, but San Antonio and Miami, those were two teams that had outstanding seasons, and for you, Sean, to say that San Antonio and Miami can advance can't advance on after only playing one game, I think is just baloney, if you had to ask me. I think you can't put reality out of the question, and you can't put what transpired and you can't put aside what transpired on in the regular season. These two teams are just simply the best, and yeah, to tell you the truth, I have them in the finals right now, but as it all stands right now, I was very impressed with Chicago. I was very impressed with Golden State, Nate Robinson, and Stephon Curry. They've been absolutely incredible. Can't say much more, but, you know, when it comes down to the end of time, I think, however it results in, the Miami Heat and San Antonio will go on. And as for Indiana and Memphis, I think those are two other teams that you got to take into consideration. I could possibly pick the Pacers over the Knicks, especially after winning game one, but still, though, I said a while ago when Jared Zwirling from ESPN New York was on that New York can make the Eastern Conference Finals. They can go at least that far. And so I think that's where New York could go. And as far as Memphis goes, I think Memphis, they played a very, very good series between the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers, I thought, were going to win that series, but instead Memphis, they didn't want to leave the playoffs so soon as they left the playoffs so soon back in the last postseason. So hey, I don't know. You just gotta see what Kevin Durant can do for the Oklahoma City Thunder. He's shown time and time again that he can be lights out. He can be lights out, and he can carry this team. He can carry this team. It's possible. Reggie Jackson isn't good. He's good off the ball, but not good with the ball. But you see how Kevin Durant has been handling the ball much more frequently and has been trying to lift his team on to the next round. Serge Ibaka, Kendrick Perkins, and including Nick Collison can be true players, and then there's no stopping the Oklahoma City Thunder. Mm-hmm. It's just very tough to tell. But if I had to say who could win that series, I think Oklahoma City can. They can defeat Memphis. I said Memphis this past Sunday could win over the Oklahoma City Thunder, but now I'm just starting to change my mind a little. So, all right, with these last 10 minutes, we're going to move on to our new segment, and it's called You Have the Throne. Sean, I'll begin with you, but You Have the Throne.
Okay, Julian, I'm going to the first topic I want to throw out there with me having the throne, having the floor and control of things, is I'm going to throw out NBA Coach of the Year, which was announced today. George Karl, Denver Nuggets head coach, who was just upset by Steph Curry and the young and upstart Golden State Warriors. George Karl is NBA's Coach of the Year. I got to say, do you agree or disagree with that, with Karl being named Coach of the Year?
Wow, that's a good question. I think George Karl, he assembled a very nice team with nice depth. I think he really did a nice job assembling this team, and as you saw this team this year, they did very well. They pulled off some hot streaks throughout the season, but I would say one thing. If it wasn't for Danilo Gallinari going down, I think the Nuggets would still be in it, would still be in the playoffs. But without Danilo, I think it just comes out as a brutal loss. As like you said, Sean, they were just manhandled by the Golden State Warriors. The Golden State Warriors, they're without David Lee, and yet they were still able to pull off this successful win over Denver. You look at Golden State too. Mark Jackson, he's a coach that has impressed many people with no coaching experience. He came into this season looking very strong along with the Warriors, and they've just been doing very well. They almost pulled off an upset in San Antonio the other night. And I'll add on one more thing, but Mike Malone of the Golden State Warriors, he's been another guy on their coaching staff who's done phenomenal. You've seen him as well in the huddles trying to prep his players and teach his players. Mike Malone, he's just been a phenomenal coach. As I feel he could be another coaching candidate out there for teams such as Brooklyn, Los Angeles, the Sixers, Milwaukee. I mean, there's just so many teams. I think Mike Malone is just another guy you got to give kudos to. And so getting back to the Denver Nuggets, though, they had a good season all around, but like I said, due to the loss of Danilo Gallinari, their hopes just lowered. Their hopes just lowered. Even when Ty Lawson was out for some time, injuries can always play a role. The Warriors didn't have as much injury problems as the Denver Nuggets, so I wouldn't blame their first round exit on George Karl's honoree of becoming the Coach of the Year. I think he totally deserves it a lot. George Karl is one of those coaches who's known as one of the best. So I would have to say he deserves it. He deserves it, and congrats to him.
I got to agree, Julian. He does deserve it, but there are other guys that I feel could have won the award. I'm not knocking George Karl, a guy who's battled through cancer and all that and the past few seasons and had health problems, and he's battling stronger than ever to coach his team. But I'm just looking around NBA most interesting list for coaches, for best coach in the NBA, and Karl is number one on the list, believe it or not. But guys who are also deserving, I feel, of the award, Eric Spoelstra could be a guy that you could look at. Mike Woodson, for the job he did in New York, or I'll name one more. What about Greg Popovich, or even Frank Vogel in Indiana? Those guys, there's some guys that could deserve a nod or two in some people's minds to be coach of the year. But as it stands, Carl is
the coach of the year.
Coach of the year. So I'm going to say deserving candidate, to say the least.
Yeah. Well, it's good you shared that, Sean. Thank you for that. But now let's get on to my topic, which is the last one. Andrew Wiggins. How amazing is Andrew Wiggins? If you've never known about Andrew Wiggins, well, let me tell you about him. He's a Canadian high school basketball player who's been playing for Huntington Prep for quite some time. He's currently a senior, and he is in the process of finishing out his time over at Huntington Prep and going on to the college level, which he's projected to be the number one prospect coming out of high school. Andrew Wiggins, he's narrowed down his options to several teams in particular. One prominent candidate has been the Kentucky Wildcats, along with John Calipari. We can't forget the run they had 2 years ago, but still, let's not forget the run they had just last year. Just last year, Wiggins has to make a wise decision here. So if I had to ask you, Sean, where do you think Andrew Wiggins should go when he makes the transition to the college level?
Looking at his list right now, schools he is considering. Say what you want of me, but call me a homer or whatever you want. But I think Andrew Wiggins should.
Well, I got the list just now, but it's Kentucky, like I said, North Carolina, Duke, Ohio State, Syracuse, Kansas, and Florida State. So out of those seven colleges, which college would be the best fit for Andrew Wiggins, as he's going to be making the transition on to the college level as the number one prospect coming out of high school?
I know we're running out of time, so I'll just make it known. I'm going to say I think he should go to the University of North Carolina Tar Heels.
North Carolina? I'd have to say Kansas. I think Kansas is one to definitely consider, especially when he went to visit Kansas. Out of all the seven, he didn't visit any of the other six. Instead, he happened to visit Kansas, and Kansas is a very nice school. It's a very nice school. It has a lot of college basketball history. They're going to be without Ben McLemore, Jeff Withey, and several others next season. So why not have Andrew Wiggins go to Kansas and play for Bill Self? I think that would be a nice fit. That about does it for Sports Kingdom today. I want to thank you for joining us. I've been your host, Julian Bravo the King, and Sean Elmer has been your co-host. Tune in this Sunday as we have the review. You can re-listen to this episode on iTunes and Stitcher. And once again, sorry for the technical difficulties, but hey, it happens. It happens, and with that, I want to thank our listeners once again for joining us, and take care. Peace out.